You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Our phone number is 564-1290 or 866-564-1290. Go to RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com, to listen to past programs and find real estate information. Call me after the program at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. Welcome back. Talking with Dan Aliff, Titans of Fortune columnist for the Santa Barbara News Press on Saturday's business section. Today is Titans of Real Estate. First segment discussed Harry Chandler. I love the part about Harry Chandler, how he used the LA Times, which he owned, to basically sell real estate and his developments and created the parade, the Rose Bowl parade, just to attract buyers. Well, I love that.
Yeah, the LA Times was not a great newspaper in those days. It was strictly a marketing piece, a Chamber of Commerce piece for Los Angeles.
And so his fortune, we married into this family and they used the paper, but of everything he did, real estate was his primary?
Yeah, he was quoted as saying, real estate is the greatest investment one can make, better than gold, silver, stocks, bonds. And he was really a proponent of that.
I quote Henry David Thoreau at the end of every broadcast and say that although I do encourage people to invest in real estate, remember goodness is the only investment that never fails. So Harry Chandler didn't quite put it that way. But
no, I don't think Harry Chandler focused on the goodness part of it.
Was he, I know the next segment here, we're going to talk about America's first millionaire, Manhattan, John Jacob Astor. But last question on Harry Chandler, would you characterize him as benevolent, or in order to be in these positions, these titans of real estate, are most of them cutthroat? Are they tough? You know, really tough, hard.
He was very tough. He was very, very sharp. But I wouldn't call him benevolent. I don't think he focused in terms of benevolence. Although he did support Caltech, he helped create Caltech in Los Angeles and bring in its first president. But he was, and he wasn't malevolent either. He was somebody who was focused on making a lot of money. He was very staunchly anti-union, and that's what made San Francisco and Los Angeles so different. People think that San Francisco and L.A. have this rivalry because of different lifestyles, but it really goes back to the time when San Francisco was very union and Los Angeles was very anti-union, and Harry Chandler and Harrison Gray Otis were leaders of the anti-union march of Los Angeles. So they had some incidents. Their building was blown up by terrorists.
Down in L.A.?
The Los Angeles Times building.
The Union terrorists?
It was Union terrorists that blew up the building and killed quite a few people.
You know, Dan, you could just go on and on and on. Maybe you should get your own show.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Maybe we'll propose it.
There is something in the works.
Maybe.
We might. Maybe.
We might.
We might see Dan Aliff on the air. So that's interesting. Union and San Francisco. Well, if we have time, we'll talk about San Francisco. But first, America's first millionaire, John Jacob Astor.
Yeah, John Jacob Astor came from Germany and got involved in the fur trade. And he was very much involved in expanding the United States westward. He was one of the first people to establish routes and pretty much responsible, too, for moving the Lewis and Clark expedition in the direction it went.
Really?
But his primary interest was New York real estate. His objective, whether it was stated or implicit, was that he wanted to own all of Manhattan Island. And he got pretty darn close to doing it.
Now give us the years where he would have started.
Well, this would have been in the early 1800s. And he bought, for example, a 70-acre parcel that 20 years after his death was already worth $70 million. And this is in the mid-19th century. Today, it's called Times Square. So he bought that. He bought most of Greenwich Village.
Wait a second. He owned Times Square in the mid-1800s.
In the early 1800s.
In the early 1800s, yeah. 20 years after his death, it was valued at $70
million. $70 million.
Now, who owned it? Did his family still own it?
His family still owned it.
So he kept it in the
Kept it in the family.
How about today, 2006?
I'm not sure. I'm sure the Astor family still has extensive interest throughout New York City and New York State.
Now, I don't want to confuse him. There's an actress or something, Astor. Down in the theater, I think there's an actual Broadway playhouse called Astor or something.
I'm sure that's all part of that Astor family. I mean, okay. One of the most memorable was one of his sons was on the Titanic. And if you remember the movie, he was the one that was very wealthy, who was sitting there having tea as the ship was going down, being very very sedate and very controlled. I'm not sure his father was like that, but his father developed a huge fortune. Much of his real estate was bought from a fellow by the name of Aaron Burr. Aaron Burr was a lawyer and represented John Jacob Astor. And when Burr had any kind of financial problems, Astor would buy the properties from Aaron Burr. And after Aaron Burr had his famous duel with Alexander Hamilton, he had to leave the country for a while. And when he did, John Jacob Astor bought more of that property. So he ended up owning Greenwich Village. He ended up owning a big component of Manhattan Island. Became America's first millionaire.
Now, I did not see the movie Titanic. And so I'll look forward to seeing that. But I grew up 20 miles north of Manhattan. So when you're telling me, so I used to go into the city quite a bit, and I left the East Coast when I was 21. But to own Greenwich Village, to own Times Square, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
And most of the land from 14th Street northward, he owned it. He was really, it was massive acquisitions of real estate.
Now, how did he start off?
He just started in the fur trade. He just developed it. He took those huge risks. The fur trade was a very risky business because you had to go into Indian country and you had to acquire fur and you had to bring the fur back, had to sell it, and he started to sell it overseas. He was even involved in the opium trade for a while with China. Started Astoria, Oregon, because he wanted to see the United States expand to the West Coast. Well, Astoria started off as a fort, which was recaptured by the British. He sent an expedition there on a ship called the Tonkin, and it arrived on the Oregon coast, and they built a fort right near where Portland is today. And it's called Astoria. But what happened is that he beseeched the president at that time and James Madison to make sure that during the War of 1812 that they wouldn't allow the British to recapture Astoria. But the British did recapture Astoria, and that's one of the reasons why we didn't control the western part of Canada, was because nobody followed John Jacob Astor's advice. He was quite an amazing guy. He had good control over his activities. He had great diplomatic relations with both England and the American Congress. During the War of 1812, he maintained relationships with everybody.
He was an astute businessman. So he started real early. When did he die?
I think he died in the 1830s, 1837, 1838.
So. Well, it's very interesting. With Chandler, who lived until, what did you say,
1944.
And so two different centuries and two different guys and two different coasts.
And the development of two different cities, entirely different cities.
And the development of two different cities. Astoria, Queens. I knew about Astoria, Queens. Having grown up back east, I didn't hear about Astoria, Oregon. And I assume Astoria, Queens it's got to be.
Absolutely.
Mr. Astoria. So two guys. So just to – are we finished with John Jacob?
I think that's enough for
now. Now, let me ask you this. Two examples, two titans, Harry Chandler, John Jacob Astor. You write about titans all the time. We just wrote about Boeing.
Right.
And I want to ask about Rockefeller. All these guys, how much of their hand is in real estate to some degree? I mean,
Obviously they all like to live according to their station, so they build these beautiful mansions. I think you can certainly say that Rockefeller, John Sr., had three massive homes, beautiful homes and estates. But he didn't build Rockefeller Center. What was interesting is his son, John Jr., thought of Rockefeller Center as his project, and John Sr. thought this is a ridiculous project. It'll never go anywhere. So John Jr. was much more effective with real estate. But John Sr. never focused on real estate, whereas John Jr. took the family money and made it grow. But he wasn't as focused into oil as his father. His father had only oil on his mind.
And that was what years again, roughly, for John Sr.?
Well, for John Sr., I think it went into the 1880s, 1890s.
And he played out. So John Rockefeller Jr.
Built Rockefeller Center.
Built Rockefeller Center. Yeah. Now...
I think John Sr. went into the 1900s, early 1900s.
Might have lived that long.
Yeah.
Now, how long did John Rockefeller Jr. go?
I'm not sure, but I think it was into the mid 20th century.
Mid-20th century. Yeah. Now, and then he had a son. He had, is there the third?
I think there are others. I haven't really studied the rest of the family.
Where does Nelson? Where are
he's a nephew of John Sr. So there are pictures you see of Nelson Rockefeller. And there's so many Rockefellers. They really amassed a great fortune, and they continued to shepherd that fortune in great ways, both right. benevolent and in the political arena. It's one of the more giving families. And I think that was really the role of John Jr. John Sr. had no interest in benevolence.
He was just focused on acquiring wealth,
wealth and oil. Oil was his big thing.
Now, so overall, so the question started with, of all, you know, you write about a lot of titans and how many of them, you know, so some of them in the very least, they'll own estates.
They're not
buying and selling, investing. Obviously, it's not their thing.
It's not their primary objective. I mean, some of these people are so focused on what they're doing. Take somebody like Milton Hershey. He built Hershey Chocolate. And Hershey, after he amassed his wealth and was building up his company, he actually developed Hershey, Pennsylvania. Now, he wanted a town for his employees. He wanted all the facilities for the employees, all the services, the theaters, the churches. And so he was very benevolent in that way. But he wasn't focused on real estate from an investment standpoint, but he built a city. Quite a few of these titans involved in their business activities actually built cities up. And other titans either bought huge ranches or huge estates, but were not focused on real estate investments. Then you have a third group, and that third group really focused on real estate investments.
And that's the group we're talking about today. We're talking about titans of real estate with Dan Aliff. Again, read his column Saturdays in the business section of the Santa Barbara News Press called Titans of Fortune. Buddy Hackett was on the program actually just weeks before he died.
Oh.
And he came on and he just talked. It was impromptu. And he was in the studio to do another show on pets. He was interested in animals. And he told this story about, and he actually said on the air, now he's like 80 years old during this interview a few years ago, that probably he made more money on buying this house in Colorado than he did in all the years working all the nightclubs. And all the deals. I think
that's what Harry Chandler would have told him.
Buy real estate. Yeah. Better investment than gold,
in the long
silver.
Term. I had an experience where I was sitting on an airplane. I had been bumped up for business class or first class because my seat didn't work. And the person I'm sitting next to is being treated like royalty by the captain. The captain comes down, the head steward, the steward. Everybody's treating him like royalty. So I'm not one to keep my mouth shut. And so I turned to him and I said, look, I don't want to breach protocol, but what should I call you, your lordship or your highness? We got involved in a conversation. His private jet, two private jets were down. One was down, one was being used. And so he's flying to Europe by this poor way of going first class on TWA at that time.
Being forced
to sit next to me, probably a difficult time for him. But what happened was that I asked him what he did and he asked me what I did. And he said that he was involved in real estate and that he had a very simple philosophy. And he was in that Fortune, in the Forbes 400. I won't mention his name. But what he said is it was very simple for him. He just had to hold real estate through a down cycle. And if he could hold real estate through a down cycle, he always made money. It was that was his philosophy.
You know, I'm going to write a column soon. And maybe I could use that line because people are getting a little nervous in this market, and not that it's tanking and not that it's falling off a precipice. We're just in a little shift from a frenetic pace that we've been in. And Dan Aliff, today's guest, just hit the nail on the head. If you can afford the payments, hold on. Stay tuned. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate will come back. I want to talk about another family back east who owned a lot, the Vanderbilts. I went to their homes, and maybe Dan will tell us how he jerry-rig the seat in business class so we can get bumped to first class. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. You'll be right back. Again, Monday mornings, 564-1290, 564-1290.